Hey everyone, welcome to my next edition episode of Ag Uncensored, and back at it again with another, I'll say legend in ag, or, you know, to many different degrees with Kip Pendleton. And I reached out to him as I've known Kip for, or I've seen you around at conferences and shows since I was a kid growing up in the ag tech precision ag world with my dad, and you've known him for a long time, and we know hundreds of the same people, and you've been around kind of the world in ag beyond just the tech side. So thanks for being on, and happy to have you.
Glad to be here. I'm a legend, at least in my own mind, Nathan. So we'll
well, you know, that everyone's got to be a legend in their own mind, at least I suppose right now with my memes and stuff, that's kind of my big trope of legendary things, and I'll bring up some crazy ideas too. But
Nathan, I share to people all the time, if you're not trying to be legendary and leave a mark in ag and make ag better, you're wasting your time. So legendary is a really good term.
Well, and in our state motto is in North Dakota, be legendary. So I guess I'm just following what the state's telling me to do. I don't always listen to the government, but, you know, I'll listen to that part. So
North Dakota is a strong progressive state. I love it.
Well, I just put a post on LinkedIn the other day, as, you know, and talking around ag tech, like, we're actually the number one user percent wise, according to the USDA surveys. And I brought up that, you know, a reason for that is, you know, we're not just corn and beans. We're not just some of these things, and there's nothing clearly wrong with that. You've lived around, you've seen cropping systems all over the world, and we're kind of in a unique world, but we have a lot of, you know, we have cold weather. We have not a lot of people. We have our own challenges, and the technology has just kind of helped push through that. And I would say I'm maybe a little spoiled living around here. And actually right now there's an event at the Grand Farm, which is only 5 miles away from me. I live really close to it. And so I'm going there after this, but, you know, looking at everything from your history, you know, there's adoption problems, and we were kind of talking on it on the pre-call of technology in ag is great, and it can do all these great things, and people are trying and working hard, but something's missing. And, you know, and yes, North Dakota is doing some great things, but we're not doing it perfectly either. You know, from your travels and work around, you know, or maybe before we get into that, like, explain a little bit more on how you've been in ag. What's been your part? And then maybe we can dive into more of that side
great,
of it.
Great question. But, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm a Champaign County, Illinois kid. I grew up on a farm. I thought Champaign County, Illinois farmers were the best in the world. What I learned, we have the best soils in the world. That's a distinct advantage from that standpoint. But, yeah, I've had a chance to progressively work across ag. I'm a proud University of Wisconsin grad. Used an agronomy and ag econ degree, and later an MBA in finance to really work across ag in a number of areas. I started and worked 20 years in the seed industry, which gave me a real grounding of how technology can change a commodity section of an industry, and how technology can really improve returns, and how technology can make farmers more effective and even change their lives. 'Cause much of what has happened in the seed industry has done that from that standpoint. I progressed. I kind of follow bell curves, right? And the next big bell curve was, what are we going to do with information, and how does information influence biotech seed crops, and how do you use those, and how do you measure those? And what I found is you got to find ways to move data. So I focused in information and data, and the way that data is collected is through precision equipment. And that allows you to do some things. And then I've now kind of progressed to, I think the next big value area in ag is biotech, biological biotech. You can call it digital biology, I think, is our fourth curve changing forward. And digital biology is taking all the things we can do with data in the human area and applying it to agriculture. And the reason I'm interested in that is because the way we've developed synthetic chemicals and the way we've, you know, now regulated them, maybe good, maybe bad, but it's almost cost ineffective or cost prohibitive to bring forward a new chemical. So I think biologicals are going to be the next wave, and biologicals are going to, you know, be a sustainable way for us to continue to feed effectively the world. And so that's kind of my progression. Nathan, I kid people all the time. I've never really applied for a job, maybe my first job. But
I'm similar.
I kind of just wandered into, and I have high faith. And so doors kind of open and next chapters or next seasons kind of start. And I've been really fortunate that way. So I think I'm following to solve a bigger problem, but I don't yet fully understand the mission.
Well, I think we're all there in life to some extent. So, but yeah, so, you know, I'll skip from the original question. And so from the biological side of things, because we're there, you know, and we were talking a little earlier. So, I mean, and you brought up, you know, in the 60s, there's 300 different seed companies and chemical companies. Well, now that is kind of the biological side. There's like 1200 or some, I don't even, who even knows what it actually is. And everyone's doing
declining each day.
Well, yeah, there's a little, the money is drying up a little bit, but it's getting more focused probably. Yeah.
And the solution are getting attached to bigger companies and
yeah.
So 2,600 is the wrong number, right? But that number will coalesce to a right number, a number of that does good things. And ultimately, I think OEMs are looking for solutions, and the OEMs will be the deliverers of biologicals because they are trusted by the channel, they're trusted by the farmer, and they're trying to displace the current products they have. So the incumbent will deliver biologicals ultimately. It's just when it's the right time.
Well, and with that, you know, naturally early on in any part of the industry, especially ag, you're not going to get everything 100% right. I mean, some of the big ones that are out there, you know, like Pivot Bio, whatnot. I mean, it's going after a very large, interesting problem, but I wonder sometimes if some of these biologicals, you know, they have their results. It's almost like taking a new drug, you know, oh, this trial, we did this and these are working. And I'll bring up the story. I've written about it before. So like my cousin tried it and it's not to call them out or anything. It's just kind of the situation. And I think a lot of other biologicals play under this is, you know, he did a split trial in a field. Great. That's how, what people do. And he reduced, you know, his nitrogen by X. And he said, you know, I spent $40 and I saved $80 and it worked for me. But then I started asking him, I was like, okay, but did you know how much nitrogen you had in your soil actually, like further down below 6 inches? Cause in most places, that's all deep we go. North Dakota, many go 0 to 6, 6 to 24. I'm like, did it work? Or did the crop just go find it somewhere else that you weren't aware of what it was sitting? And then also, was the trial on the, you're splitting 160 acres. And then my dad, he used to farm that ground. And he's like, he told my cousin, he's like, Peter, you put the biological on the best part of the field. Of course it was going to do better. Yes. So are we also verifying these things correctly from what you're seeing to really get into the weeds of how it works?
Yeah. But, you know, big question. And all of these are big questions. I used to do some work with Deere, and Deere has this saying, right questions, right answers, right? So I think all of ag tech and all of agriculture, when we ask the right question, when we're trying to solve the right problem, we can get the answer right. When we start in an opposite way, right answer, you know, wrong question, we get a problem. And so I think some of that, I'm a big believer in Pivot Bio from the perspective of they are trying to solve a really big problem that is mandated globally now by different governments, I don't think the U.S. yet has taken that stand. But Canada, the EU, is saying to farmers, you can't put that much nitrogen on next year or by this X date. But there's no solution. There's an answer. You must do this. But there's no question of how you're going to do this or facilitation of how you're going to do this from that standpoint. So companies like Pivot Bio, I mean, or any technology, the first iteration doesn't answer the doesn't get it exactly right, right?
Yeah.
And you can say that in precision agriculture. You can say that in seed. You can say, but it, we all kind of forget those, right? The reality is nothing works perfectly out of the gate. I work a biological reference. So I sit on a family office that has a company called Exacto. Exacto is the leader in adjuvants to the industry, right? Sure. And adjuvants make chemical applications better. And I think will play a big role in making biological applications better. I can remember as a kid following my dad around in Illinois when chemicals failed pre-adjuvants. And there's nothing like standing at the end of a turn row with a farmer who says, what the heck happened here? And and trying to explain that. And so, again, I think we're in that phase, or we're always in that phase with technologies as they come forward, is answer the right question with the right answer and understand that the first season is critical to learn what you're going to do the next seasons, right, from that standpoint. And so, you know, again, I think one of the things we do really well in ag, we fail fast and we fail and we improve. And that's how agriculture has been a continually really advancing industry as far as technology. We never think we're doing enough, but ag is really, if you take a 50-year look or a 30-year look or a 10-year look, man, nobody's doing what they were doing then.
No. And I mean, looking back, you know, from where our farm was, you know, 40 bushel wheat was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then it's like now, oh, that's awesome. A poor crop. And some of it's just genetics. Some of it's the chemicals. Some it's just people taking care of the ground better. And even with, you know, from the biological side, I think of it too is, you know, in a sense right now, it's being embraced much like normal chemistry is put this on the field. It equates to X. It kills X weed. It does this. And I've thought, and I've talked to a few about it, but it's hard. There's nothing easy about this, is using more, you know, let's call it the old ways of, you know, where I grew up around the site specific ag, is putting the right biologicals in the right place, because then you might get more effectiveness out of it. And I know that's hard to do, and it's hard for ag retailers to sell that idea and to test that idea. But I think that's almost what the biological sides need to really get past this initial phase, is find out where it actually works well and where it doesn't, and kind of fit in there. But that's hard.
Great insights, Nathan. I think when we get a few years forward and biologicals are utilized, what we're going to see, the biggest change we're going to see, is not necessarily the product, but the expectation of what the product will do. Chemicals kill things dead. It's like, there's nothing here. Or, that plant looks really good. Biologicals make the outcome better in a whole system approach, but you can't necessarily see that. And so you're the salesman standing there with a farmer. How do you first sell that correctly and manage those expectations? And it's different. It's like, whoa, hold it. And so my watch is saying, I got to go make my next, or I've got to go meet with my next person, or I want to wrap this up and get an order. So the expectations and the playbook will change. We're good in ag in doing that. We've done that before with fertilizers. We've done that before with different modes of action with chemicals. We've done that with different approaches with data. So we can change that. We haven't yet come up with a biological playbook at the basics level or the distributor level or the dealer level, where a just out of college kid, because that's generally who gets the sales position, right? It's like, this is how you sell it. And to have 50 ways to sell something is hard, or 50 products, you want to major in 4 or 5. And you want to basically have the same script. Biologicals, for good and for bad, have a different script than ag chemicals. And they have a different outcome. And I think they deliver ultimately a different sustainable answer as being mandated, you know, by different governments around the world. So we can all stick our head in the sand and say, not going to work. What you're going to see is in 2 or 3 years, someone else made it work. Someone else put the system together. And that person who said that'll never work, they just lost a lot of market share on their very profitable ag chemicals. So the world always changes for and rewards those people that solve the right problem with the right answer. And so I think you're going to see you're a great marketer. And this is a marketing issue more than a technical issue, I think. Putting it in the right position with the right expectations will deliver the right results ultimately.
Well, and I think part of the other issue with it too is, and I was talking with a good ag retail friend of mine who's been in the tech side and has played with a little bit of everything, and they're one of the top 10 ag retailers in the country. And he kind of made it, and it was kind of an unfortunate statement. And I've also mentioned this and wrote a little bit about it, is their precision ag program, while successful, is limited because that's not where they make a lot of money. And so it's easier to sell seed, chemical, fertilizer, and even their top salesman, he will not work with farmers that use precision ag tech because they want it more complicated because they know it's complicated. And so it's been easier for that guy just to sell it to the people that don't want it. And he makes more money himself as the entire precision ag program for that ag retailer individually as a person.
Yeah. Money. And also, you know, you have to think about, do you have your retailer hat on or do you have your farmer hat on? The farmer that's using more precision ag knows more than the dealer selling him the product, right? Because he's got actual data on his farm for his acres and multiple years. And so a precision ag farmer has an advantage. It totally shifts the narrative. But back to your point, I'm going to be the most successful dealer I can be. I'm going to go sell the most acres I can with the highest profitable products. Same thing with a deer dealer. I make a whole lot more as a deer salesman selling a combine or a large tractor or a large planter than I do selling the data package. You know, I don't want to take the time to do that because I don't make any money doing that. We've got to align some of those things.
Well, yes. And, you know, okay, that gets back to that original question that I've, you know, we have an adoption issue with this stuff. And I think it's slowly getting better just because people are getting more used to, you know, apps and this stuff. And it's become a little bit more of a necessity in certain areas. Internet's better, you know, you name it. Integration into OEM stuff is just easier, but we're still kind of lagging behind. And I've been trying to think, like, what can launch it to that level that we just, that comfortability level or whatever it is. And honestly, the thing, and this is what scares people out of it, is the only way to do that or will it happen through regulation of, like, you have to do it, or we're government, we pay you to do it. And farmers don't want that. We know that. And ag is scared of regulation. It's spendy, but what else can be done to kind of kick people in the butts to utilize it more? And instead of the top 5% of farmers doing it and doing it, you know, how do we get to 50%?
Yeah. We're all, creatures of habit, right? And so I stand back and say we need good startups to bring a spotlight on a problem today that could be solved today. The bigger companies will ultimately solve that problem, but they don't need to solve the problem until it's a real problem or a profitable product to replace what they currently sell or their salesperson currently sells from that standpoint. You know, you and I were talking, and North Dakota is a great microcosm. I think Mike North Dakota leads in precision agriculture because you're farming more acres and you have fewer people that need to get things done, and you have more owners with operators than owners operators. The difference being, I'm the owner operator. I'm going to drive, plant, harvest. I'm going to do it all.
You're too busy. You get overwhelmed.
I'm going to sit back and I'm going to work with my team or my employees to get it put in. And I'm going to always stay back and above it and looking at it. I don't know many farmers that call themselves a CEO, but their job is really the chief executive officer. They need to make the right decisions that are financial and agronomic and, return on investment, and that I can work with the bank on, and then I can get the best risk. So ultimately, North Dakota is ahead of the curve. And ultimately, you're going to see the same thing in Western Canada, as we were talking about. Technology drives ability to scale. But what it really drives is ability to scale profitably, or ability to get a return on investment from that perspective. And so some of that is, some farms can still do it the old-fashioned brute force way.
Well, they got the champagne soils.
But to your point, how you will farm your farm versus how your farm was farmed before is different. That doesn't mean your dad was right or wrong, or your uncles were right or wrong. It just means you're going to take a different approach. Some technology items need somebody who says, this is a more valuable tool to me than my vice grip, right? And that's a generational change. Mm-hmm. Both have technology applications, but massively different optimization to a problem, right? And ability to scale versus do.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and it's something I do see more often. Just working in, it's kind of weird. I've worked with farms and groups in Western Canada a lot, just because there's a lot of similarities, and we're on the border and whatnot. And it's like things trickle down from there, and a technology wise, they'll adopt it faster for all of those reasons you just said. And yeah, other areas of the country are slower, just for they're smaller, or they're more. I'm the one all person on the farm, and it's to do up here. It's more of a necessity because time too. It's like you got 4 months to put something in, and for it to grow and to maybe be successful. And you have to pre-plan so much of things, and the more data and information and tools you use, the more you can pre-plan. And other areas they can do it slower, maybe, the warmer the climate, I guess, maybe that's part of it. And, another part of that I get concerned too is, while maybe more my generation, people younger than me are more adapt to use some of these tech, one thing I've been hearing too is, they're not also being educated on some of the other core systems in ag from, people that have been in it for 30 years. And some of those guys are getting out. I mean, the next 20 years, I mean, heck, 5-10 years of the people retiring from different ag retail groups, from input companies, machinery, agronomy, banks, crop insurance, you name it, government systems. That information and knowledge that they have acquired that is very useful, people like you, isn't getting as passed down as much as maybe needed. I know there's a worry about that. And is that going to hold back some of this progression? Think about
his system of systems was here and in a little pocket notebook, and with his banker and with his, few people who he bought products from, that was his system of systems. Today, your system of systems is global. It's what your computer can reach. It's what your phone can connect to. And you can not only plan, but you can manage. And you can, at the end of the season, look at and say, we were talking about, best part of the field, worst part of the field. You can analyze that. You can look at, is that a right answer? Is that a wrong answer? For us in agriculture to do great things, whether it's biologicals from your biosciences, or whether it's other items, we have to move forward with data so that we can unharness things like AI, so that we can stand back at the end and say, let me think really hard about what I did right and what I did wrong, versus say, hey, give me a feedback on this, which AI systems look, learn, tell you what to do. Right and wrong, they're not fully autonomous and ready to go yet. But our ability in ag to, again, or someone like you, ability to move forward and have a differential advantage over your neighbor is going to be your data quality to make better decisions and informationally driven decisions. Today, we've got a lot of data, but it's not good data in ag, and it's not orchestrated, and it's not put together in ways that it can be utilized. That to me, you know, again, living a life in ag and at 65, looking at ag right now, our greatest limiting factor is we're not harnessing and utilizing the data we have, or putting a high enough priority on the data we have to not look at to manage, but to look at to change and make better results going forward, or even say, I'm going to totally change this next year, right? And that's what we're going to compete against, I think, in areas. And I think you're going to see a lot of that coming out of Brazil. Brazil is going to move from where they are to a level because, you know, it's 22 big farms, and they're going to do, the owner operator is going to stand back and say, everybody's doing it this way, and this fleet of combines going across, and we're going to take that data and we're going to feed it into AI. And powerful global partners are going to say, look what they're doing. That's going to be an advantage. Scary, maybe. But those are changes that I see right now happening around the world.
Well, and that's a great point. And two parts to that. So, you know, from people, you know, getting out of ag, or whether, you know, retiring or whatever, even if, you know, there's a fear of, like I said, that, you know, call it brain drain, but at the same time, that might be the trigger that gets others to dive more into tech, because they're like, well, I guess my old boss just didn't want to pass down what he learned. I got to relearn all this. Oh, there's all this data that was not utilized. I'm going to go look back at it and look through it. It almost, and that might happen, you know, even from governmental things, from reporting, you know, the old way of, you know, paper, or here's these rules, it'll force a change. Be like, oh, well, you know, if this happens all the next 20 years, the USDA is half the people it used to be, maybe. Oh, we have to use these new technology tools to actually do the reporting and the way that people want. Maybe not. But then to your last point there, and I've talked more and more about this, and I'm hearing more people talking about it. Other countries are stepping up the game faster with adoption with technology than we are. Some are doing good things, but Brazil, great point, they're increasing, and it's cheaper to do things there. And I was talking with some people from, you know, on the California side of ag, and like acres are leaving there left and right, going to Peru or to Africa, where there is a plethora of people you can hire for $10 a day. And it's going to change so much of the dynamics here in the US. And, you know, we talk about, you know, corn and beans so much, but yeah, Brazil's changed that market. You know, we wanted the growth trend to be like, oh, we should be making $10 a bushel for corn. It's like, well, because of Brazil, we're still making the same, but we're producing more. And, you know, ethanol is going to last forever. Like, there is some scary conversations that need to be had on where things actually go versus what people want them to be, that traditional U.S. ag family stuff.
Yeah. And I think we have many advantages that we can apply, and we need to apply them in the U.S. across our industries, across our government, and to stay a leader, right? I worry we're falling behind in U.S. agriculture because we're not exporting as much, because we're not utilizing that as a basic business tool of the country to manage our deficits. And that's not good for American agriculture. And the opportunities are just, put your eye back on the ball, right? There's opportunities that I mentioned to you, I just been in Asia for 3.5 weeks. I had a chance to see the good, the bad, the ugly, but a lot of great things. I was really impressed. My biggest technology versus traveling from the U.S. to Asia, I entered Singapore. I never talked to anybody. My passport was scanned. This could be good and bad. My passport was scanned. They took a picture of my face, right? And I entered. I didn't talk to anybody. Now, I can tell you there were people standing there with an iPad looking at the tablet of me popping up and knowing that I, you know, wasn't a threat, quote unquote. But I came back into the U.S. for customs. It took us 2.5 hours to clear customs.
Yeah.
We're not utilizing technology correctly. If we utilize technology correctly, we will continue to be the pace setter around the world. And we will continue to have a cost advantage versus other around the world. And we'll lead the sustainability factors of doing it the right way versus just saying, you can't do that. You can't do that. We have to have solutions to what we can do. And they need to be the right solutions that work for the farmer and work for the distributor and work for the, you know, basic food market that consumers work with.
Well, and yeah, and I agree fully on that, as that we need to almost tie some of the tech to our end commodity, because we're not doing that as much, but that's our advantage right now with all the infrastructure and stuff we can do. Of course, there's a fear about that, and that comes into some of the, you know, call it data privacy thing. A reason why we're not scanning, you know, coming back into the country is that there's a fear. There's this innate fear that the government's going to do all these things to me, where in other countries, and maybe right or wrong, governments be like, no, we need this. We can't help you with all these other programs and systems. Here we have this fear of like, we want this independence. That's what we're built on, this independence. And I think that in ag is, it reflects that too, is, oh, well, I'll farm the way I farm because I've been a farm the way I farm. And I don't want this person, that person to have all this data because of a fear of losing independence, but we're actually losing it by not doing it in a sense.
You mentioned some foreign markets, and I think they are more connected. One of the things I always love about North Dakota, and it's maybe because you're all related in one way or another, North Dakota farmers work together. North Dakota farmers solve solutions together. If I go to a lot of other Corn Belt states, it's like, no, I'm competing against my neighbor. I'm competing against that neighbor. I don't want to tell him anything. It's a win-lose. I want to win. I want them to lose. That isn't a winning long-term formula. And Argentina and Brazil, they're formally sharing. Here's what we did. Here's our financials. Here's what we did. How, you know, what'd you see? So they're learning at a faster cycle. Things like biologicals get adopted much quicker right now in Brazil because they're sharing what's happening. We're kind of like, hold it. We're playing poker here. I'm not
secret
cards. And because I'm going to win and you're going to lose. That's not a great long, that's not a good long game. That's not a perpetual long game of being the industry leader, I believe, or the global leader.
Well, and one of the reasons it's a little better, to your point, up here is we definitely have more of a co-op based kind of process. Like I from other states, some different agri-tech are like, why is in North Dakota? Why is there like 100 different little elevators and things? It's like co-ops, man. And they're like, and that's not as prolific or everywhere else. Although some co-ops are getting almost too big for their own good of being actual co-ops. But why that happened is a very actually interesting story and why it's unique here. And I think whether this can happen or not politically or not, because that's a whole nother thing, is back in, I think it was the 20s or 30s, basically the, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, which is controlling wheat prices, was doing just that. And all the politicians at the state at the time were kind of on board with that. They're like, oh yeah, they'll do grain. Well, then a bunch of farmers got pissed.
Yeah.
They said, well, I'm going to run for office. And they did. They took over the entire state. It's called the NPL, Nonpartisan League. And because of that, then they created something that right now seems impossible. They created a state-owned mill where the state owned it and you could get the right grain prices, and then that mill would distribute out, and then a state bank so that you could centralize and, you know, give the money where it's needed and in a fair way. And it's a very kind of socialistic type approach. Of course, that now is honestly like it's the state kind of becomes a hypocrisy jungle, as that's the last thing they want, but then they praise that whole process too. But I can see other countries doing that in a sense more, or it's easier because of that collectiveness. And we're getting scared of working together. And it can be scary because there's so much more information out there. You're like, oh, they're going to know all my stuff. I'm like, I don't know. Everyone knows everyone's stuff these days, whether you like it or not. It's just how you use it.
Exactly. Right. You're a thought leader in agriculture. And so you can shape some of these changes. The systems we built in the 20s were built because of oversupply and, you know, depressed prices and so forth. Is that the right system 100 years later? In some cases, yes. In some cases, no.
Yeah.
And we have vastly different ways to work those systems today from that standpoint. We just need to apply those. And, you know, it's big, and it's a system of systems. It's very interconnected, right? Value creation isn't what I can do with my poker hand. It's what I can do within my systems of systems and plugging into those right relationships that will ultimately help me. And I always tell people, would you rather have more data or less data? And you have to give to get. And so if you give your data, what will you get back? And what will you know from that perspective? I think there are good things. A great article yesterday in the Wall Street Journal about insurance prices on cars are going up because when I signed to have my OnStar on my truck, I can use OnStar. It's like, great. Yep. Yeah. If I had a crash, but OnStar can now share my data, and they are sharing my data with insurance companies. So every time I go, you know, 75 versus 70, that's recorded. And so that's an example of sharing data in a bad way. There are ways, though, that data can help make a better truck, make a better, you know, system.
Yeah.
Tell me I'm about to have a breakdown ahead of time, quote unquote. Those are all good things, or stop me before I even know I need to stop. Right. So there's always trade-offs.
Well, my pickup I got a 23 and it'll say, oh, you're this percentage of, you know, braking or accelerating slowly. And I don't look at it a lot, but it almost kind of is like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm that guy that like slows down a mile ahead of time. So I don't use my brakes.
Yep.
Or I'll slowly accelerate. I've become kind of the quintessential old man driving. I'll just putz around. I don't care. You know, when you're younger, it's different, but you know, on the ag perspective, it's weird in a sense, because we want to compare ourselves to our neighbors and how we're doing better. Yet sometimes some of the groups that have come out with ways to do that, they're chastised. Like, you can't do that. It's like, but you want to know that information. You're talking about it at the coffee shop. Don't you want real data that actually proves it? Or are we living in this, like, we have this social experiment nag. Why aren't we utilizing that to the full degree of how comparing ourselves to each other when you're doing it anyways? Why not do it better and really prove it?
If we have 18,000 farms in the U.S. that are producing more than 85% of the value in the U.S., those 18,000, if they were collectively working together, thinking about that, learning from what their data is, and working with those suppliers to them, the OEMs, the distributors, the dealers, our systems would advance, and we would have great advantage from that standpoint. Instead, we have you know, ag has always been defined as an industry with 5 to 7 silos, right? And the silos are defined that way because it's advantageous to a big company, maybe hypothetically like a Cargill, to control or understand their area and mm-hmm. not be able to see the whole data. The ability to see things like most industries see things could be really powerful for agriculture. And I think we're beginning to see the early stages of that, primarily because we now have the technology to do that, right? And cost effectively in real time do that. Cargill and ADM and companies like that have done great things because that's how the system needed to evolve 100 years ago. The reality is we're in different systems now. We have different consumers who have different needs. And the ability for us to connect in our systems of systems as growers or ag companies and play a role that advances agriculture, I think is a great opportunity. And I'm not criticizing ADM or Cargill in that. I'm just saying, you know, everybody has a business model and everybody has a focus and the ability to do good. They've done tremendous good, right? The ability to next chapter, what will it be? We'll see. But there are always groups that will break away, like good North Dakota farmers, to say, hey, this isn't working. Hey, that's a good balance.
We're trying. Well, and to that point, what's interesting is, I mean, clearly just doing this podcast or people putting on, you know, there's tons of people actually being open and talking about their experiences. You look at some of the farmers, there's a, you know, the Millennial Farmer, Larson's Farms, and they're sharing the total experience. And, you know, before, if you broke down, the tractor broke down or the crop wasn't good, I mean, you wouldn't tell anybody about that because I don't want to tell people that something didn't work or I failed here or there, you know, to that earlier point, you know, we fail fast, but we don't necessarily want to tell people about it or how that happened. That is starting to shift with other farms and people saying, oh, this is how I'm doing it. Like I can't control the weather. This happened, or combine broke down and it cost me $10,000 to fix. It's a reality. And that is shifting. I wonder if it can shift fast enough to keep the trend going without it harming us in certain ways. Because I know one thing I was speaking at, and I scared a whole room full of farm equipment dealers, because, you know, they're so integral to kind of jump-starting some of the stuff, you know, from a technology standpoint, and they're not doing it. Now, some OEMs are doing better than others, and everyone knows what that is. But I said to him, I was like, if you guys don't take heed of this stuff, other groups are going to kind of force it through other channels. And I said, you might be scared of, oh, Monsanto having this data or John Deere having this data or Cargill or whatever. I was like, you guys are thinking too small. Where is all your data right now? It's in Google, it's in Amazon, it's in Apple, and it's in Microsoft. Whether you like it or not, you don't even know. Now, are they doing malefic or bad things with it? No or yes. There's no way of knowing or doing anything, but they know what technology took and how it increased their businesses by trillions. More or less, they're going to come in and trickle down in some way where they see to, not saying they want to take advantage, but they see where data can be powerful and make their businesses grow and make their products better and more efficient. It's like, if you can own that better, if you work collectively with your growers, with people in your dealership network to hone this in more, otherwise you might get caught into something that your data is getting somewhere anyways. Yeah. It's just, you're not in the driver's seat of where that data can help you.
Yeah.
It's being used almost for you to follow a plan instead of you creating a plan using data.
Yeah. I think we're in a real sea change right now in ag manufacturing machines, right? So think about what Deere has invested in. That's what you do as a leader. You figure things out ahead of time and whatever. Now AGCO and now CNH, the moves that have been made in the last 12 to 18 months acquiring a Raven, acquiring a Trimble, or JVing with a Trimble, now bring those tools to a bigger platform and a bigger opportunity. And the question really is, do you do the same thing as Deer, or do you do something different? And your point is exactly right. It's coming through your machine, but you have no idea compared to Amazon or compared to Google or compared to, and for American agriculture, you know, and it's probably different in eggs and dairy and some of the areas that are more integrated, but those companies are very definitely entering the food market or the food chain and understanding the food chain better than the people in the food chain, because they're top to bottom. And that's what we need to do more as a, as an ag industry, is embrace utilizing data and embrace putting intelligence to work from that perspective, because that'll drive biological success. That'll drive the next level of seed success. It'll drive the next. Robotics is a great, you know, robotics will be in North Dakota more than anywhere else, because you've got vast acres and you don't have enough people to run machinery. And so robotics will come in. The question is, what do you learn in the first couple of years of robotics to make it even better? Well, the company running the robot will know better than the farmer, maybe, if you don't pay attention.
Yeah. And I was on another podcast from a group out of Australia, New Zealand the other week. And the guy was out of New Zealand. I was like, is there a lot of billionaires, you know, moving there because of, you know, the upcoming apocalypse, or they just have too much money and they're just trying to be safe and, you know, do what every human normally does. Everyone wants a bunker or whatever. And he was saying that. And then I was kind of thinking of it as, if the end of the world comes, or some big thing, you know, something bigger than what COVID was and all that, and I have to, you know, everything changes, well, I'm going to probably move back to where I grew up on our farm, because I know my neighbors. There's a community there. We have our big, beautiful church that, you know, people collective just meet at the very least. They know me. I know them. I'm going to get through hard times by working with them. Or I can be in the mindset like some of the billionaires and say, I'm going to build this big bunker and I'm just going to stay in it to feel safe. When actually that's the probably worst place you want to be, because then you're targeted.
Yeah.
And I was trying to kind of bring that as an analogy, is that's kind of what can happen if you're building a bunker, you're holding all your data, you're saying, I'm on my own island of farm. Like, fine, you can survive that way, but you're becoming a target then to be taken advantage of, because you're not working together with others.
And you're a Polaroid picture frozen in time. And nobody knows Polaroid anymore or Kodak anymore, because they bunker. It's like, this is what we do. That's why I say, I think we're in a really different place with the machinery companies and the data, because they cross every acre and they can do a lot with that information, a lot to help their customer with that information, the farmer, from that perspective. But business models have to change. And then the question is the ag retailer the value point for the farmer, or is the ag manufacturer with the equipment that, and that's a
battle. Yeah, that's tough.
That's coming reality. If you look at it as a system of, we'll help you with this, you help us with that, all of us stay in what we do best, it creates great, great return on investment for everybody. And it's a all boats rise.
Yeah, when I was in crop insurance, I was trying to get, I think every little community needs its kind of leaders with, you know, especially around data and ag. And in that, you know, my old boss was kind of teaching me this process. And as I was meeting crop insurance agents, I was like, geez, they could become these data stewards. They don't have to do everything, but they already have all this data that's private, and they're strict to like sitting in their guns, but they need to own more of being a data steward than just like selling insurance or managing it. And then, you know, others need to step up too. you know, agronomists need to do a little bit more. The dealers need to do a little bit more. The seed guy needs to do a little bit more to get all this working. Like, we need to see those opportunities more.
And to do a little bit more, you got to do a lot less. So you have to change. And that's yes. the greatest impediment, right, to really changing. Because I know how to do this. I'm pretty good. I'm good. I may not be great, but I'm good. I can do this. Versus I have no idea how to operate that. The insurance industry has not been computerized enough in my mind.
No,
and they haven't. If it were more computerized, the data would be there and you'd be able to say, hey, here's the opportunity. And really, there are many opportunities, right? And many change. And, you know, the 20-80 rule, 20% of the people always create 80% of the output and the value. The 20%ers are changing. Those mm-hmm. people are adopting. The reality is if you're in that 80% producing 20%, you have to change your business model because you're going out of business and you don't even know it yet. And it's not yeah. sustainable. And for most of us, we want to sustain and do good. And I think that's the opportunity across agriculture. And quite honestly, that's the opportunity in election year for to get politics yeah. right. Because I don't think we're doing politics right at all. And I'm not taking any kind of view. Just
no, it's a mess. It's okay to say it's a mess.
And we are the envy of the world in some ways over the time I traveled globally for 40 years. And now when I travel, they go, what the heck is going on in the U.S.? Because CNN is global and
yeah.
Fox is now global. And I go, yeah, we're going through a patch. We shouldn't go through a patch. We should lead, always lead.
Yeah, this there's a lot at stake here, but I see shimmers of hope.
I do too.
In a lot of places, and you know we're going through a rough patch. Maybe we're going. You could call it either we're either going through our awkward phase or our awkward college phase. We're going through a phase, or maybe it's our midlife crisis. I don't know. I would hope it's earlier than later. Everything, but
we did when the world was in meltdown with COVID. The U.S. did amazing things. U.S. companies did amazing things. They not only survived. We need to take that kind of speed and initiative and coalition approach to solve the issues that we can identify, but we're largely ignoring them and largely debating about them and politicizing them. And so COVID, to me, is a great, it's a terrible thing, but it is a great blueprint for we can get things right fast. We can do regulatory fast. We can get approvals fast. And right now, we're not getting faster. We're getting slower
on the yes,
effect yep. agriculture.
Yeah, it was a testament to let's just get past our bullshit and let's get some stuff done. Because it's needed to be done. And I hope it can maybe get to that. Maybe the, you know, just like in ag, you know, there's large cultural transitions that are going to happen in the next 10, 20 years, whether we like it or not. And there's a lot of different reasons that is. Maybe it'll naturally happen, but we have to be more aware of how we're going to deal with that transition than just crossing our legs and or being our stubborn self. And that's maybe the biggest thing here in North Dakota we have a problem with. We're very stubborn, Germans and Norwegians. So there is that. It does happen, but, you know.
I would say keep doing what you're doing. You're a thought leader. You shine a light on things we need to do better, things that are problems, things that when some of your newsletters, it's like, wow, I'm laughing out loud at that. But that's reality. Other thought leaders who read your information can act. We all need to act. We all need to say we can change this. We can continue to make this the greatest place in the world and the greatest systems in the world and the ability to continue and sustain the world. And those are things that you play a big role in.
Well, I appreciate that, Kip. And we're getting near the end of time, and I know you got a hard stop here. Any kind of last thoughts around just technology and ag in general, or what you're most hopeful for? I mean, we're talking a lot about that, but any just kind of main big trigger parts at the end here?
I mean, rule of three, right? If you're working in agriculture, work with others, right? You can't do it alone. Secondly, data, pull your data together and apply your data, learn from your data. And if you've got lousy data, there's the only person who can fix it is you. The last thing is know what you're trying to do. What is the value you're trying to create? What is your why? Why do you exist? What is the problem, the why that you're solving? Mm-hmm. If you do those three things, I think American agriculture is amazing. And I think anybody working in agriculture, whether you're on the farm or in a dealership or working for an OEM, if you take that basic view, you will be ahead of the pack and you will be like you, leading others to the things we need to be doing.
Well, we'll end that on a high note. So listen to Kip and to his point, keep following, subscribe to my Ag Uncensored podcast. I got a lot of other stuff coming out, so it's going to be interesting and fun, but thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Look forward to your other podcasts.
Yeah. Thanks, Kip.